Good evening and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Welcome to February, folks. Tonight I have my rescheduled guest from when I had the horrible laryngitis and could not speak to anyone back in January, Mia Hopkins. On tonight, Mia Hopkins writes lush romances starring fun, sexy characters who love to get down and dirty. She's a sucker for the working class heroes, brainy heroines, and wisecracking best friends. When she's not lost in a story, Mia spends her time cooking, gardening, traveling, volunteering, and looking for her keys. In a past life, she was a classroom teacher and still has a pretty good teacher voice and teacher stare. She lives in the heart of Los Angeles with her roguish husband and two waggish dogs. I like the roguish and waggish. That's great. For more books, freebies, and fun stuff, you can visit her website at miahopkinsauthor.com. And the link is right here on the page. And her Twitter handle is miahopkinsxoxo. And please remember, this is a live interview, so you can call in to chat at 347-633-9609 anytime. And let us welcome Mia to the show. Welcome.
Hi, Tabitha. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Glad you're on tonight from the West Coast. How's the weather this week?
It's lovely. It's lovely. I'm not going to go on about it because I know that not everyone is enjoying sunshine and 70-degree weather. So.
Yeah, it has been
pretty much most of the time.
Well, yeah, that's LA for you. But luckily, y'all got some rain recently, right? You got you'll see my y'all. You know where I'm from.
Yeah, I know it rarely happens, and I think for me, the way that I make it happen personally is that I get a car wash.
Oh, yeah.
It immediately
that always helps.
Rain, so. Yeah, exactly.
Of course, nobody, I lived near Houston, so nobody really, we don't wash our cars because it's going to just rain again, like, immediately, so we just kind of wait. It just rains all the time, where we're in, like, a rainforest sometimes. But luckily, it hasn't been lately. We've had this kind of odd, dry winter, which is weird considering everybody else has had a pretty wet winter, so. Anyway, loving your weather, and hoping that the weather's equally nice at the Super Bowl this Sunday up there.
So, oh yeah,
not,
that's a really
not too far from you. It's a couple
right,
of hours.
Yeah, to Patsy
just going. Yeah.
Wait, no, not too far. I mean, it's gonna be a really beautiful day, I'm pretty sure.
Well, good, good. We wanna see, I'm not gonna say who. We wanna see somebody win really, really big this time. I have too many friends who go either way. I'm really excited because I like Cam Newton. I think he's a really young, energetic quarterback, but it's hard to not want to see Peyton Manning win one on this, you know, he's old and on his way out of the game. So anyway, it'll be an exciting game. So, which is better than most years. Welcome to the show, and let's talk a little bit about, I was reading your, before I got on the phone with you, I was reading the front page of your website, and I love the first paragraph, cracks me up. It says, if you like good eats, bad puns, sexy rogues, hot cowboys, sassy heroines, and breathlessly happy ever afters, you're in the right place. And that is hilarious, and that is so inviting, too. So tell me a little bit about what you think kind of just characterizes your writing style.
Well, my first book came out last year, and I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of really good people, and I feel like I'm developing a style as I go along. So, the things that I really love to see in romance novels, I try to put in my own books. So, it's exactly that. Like, I like to play with language. I like to have quirky characters. I really love, I was thinking about this the other day, I really love wisecracking best friends because I'm pretty lucky to have really hilarious girlfriends. And so it's easy for me to, you know, support my characters by giving them friends who are constantly making fun of them. I think it's great. That kind of
right.
Thing.
You got to have that one on the side just giving you hell. That's always fun.
Exactly. You know, just somebody who's there to call you out whenever you get too full of yourself. So you'll find that in my book. And all of my books are set in California. So the people that I've grown up with, you can hear echoes of them in my characters. Just people from different cultural backgrounds, people who tend to be working class, just the people that I grew up with. And so you'll find that kind of character in my book.
Do they read your books and say, hey, that kind of sounds a little bit like me?
Well, I do. I know, right? I have to be careful with that. Some of them do read my books, but I don't think any of them have recognized who they are yet.
So okay, good.
Yeah, we're gonna keep going with that, and hopefully that streak will last.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just was like, you have to ask that question. You know?
Yeah, you know, like, because I just started, and so, you know, my husband loves that I write romance because people will say, hey, you know, like that hero, uh-huh. You know, did she base that on you? You know, I kind of nod, you know, yeah, absolutely. That's him all the way. Every single book is him. But I just, like, maybe this book that came out in November is, it's called Deep Down. And uh-huh. It's about a fisherman off the Santa Barbara coast. And mm-hmm. The female protagonist is a sushi chef from Japan. And when I was younger, about 21 or so, I lived in Japan for a little bit of time. And I taught English. And she's a lot of her characteristics are based on some of the students that I had back then, kind of these young, really, like, enthusiastic, curious, kind of, but also very disciplined students. When I was writing her, they would just kind of come out in her mannerisms and in the things that she did.
Right.
So, yeah. Kind of more like an amalgamation of people that I've known rather than just basing it on one person,
right.
Which would still be pretty funny. But I try to combine people so that I don't get in trouble.
But, you know, I mean, as a writer, what we see out in life, you know, I mean, that's where we get inspiration from, you know, these quirky little habits mm-hmm. of a certain person or, you know, the way somebody says something that's, you know, maybe absurd to other people, but you find it humorous. And mm-hmm. those are the little things that get like stuck in your brain. And you know, it only makes sense that when you're trying to develop a character that kind of pops on the page, you know, that's called being creative, you know. I understand that. I think that's really cool. And I don't think people would get really upset unless you're, you know, just making a complete a-hole or something, you know.
Exactly. You know. Oh, that horrible old boss, you know, that guy.
Yeah, right.
No, I mean, when I have – actually, I was blogging about this recently. When you kind of – face a little bit of writer's block and you're not sure which way to take a story, one of my favorite things to do is remember the funny things that people have told me or funny things that I've overheard, you know, just mm-hmm. kind of running errands and things like that. And those lines will find their way into my book just in really funny places. So there was this one thing that I heard, I think it was last week. I just started going to a gym for my, you know, for my resolution. And there was a trainer working with a gentleman at this gym, and she was showing him how to do some basic exercises, and she says, all right, now I'm going to show you how to do lunges, right? And I was just eavesdropping because I'm a professional eavesdropper.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, for a second there, I thought you said lunches, like, I already know how to do lunches. Like, I already know how to do lunches.
That's why I'm here.
It was just one liner after one liner. You just kept going, and it was so funny. It made the hour go by really quick. So see, I'll find a way to put that in a book. I don't know how, but I will.
Well, that's another thing about authors is you're like constantly absorbing things. So, you know, and the worst eavesdroppers in the whole planet, because, you know, it's, when you write characters, it's basically a study of human nature. You've got to know about all these different personality quirks and types and things, because you've got to like experience them in the world to be able to write it, you know.
Exactly. And you know that if you capture someone properly, like somebody, the reader will realize that you've captured them too. They'll recognize that person from their own life. So you have to make sure that you do
exactly,
it right.
Yeah. And when you do, you go, oh gosh, that's just exactly like so-and-so. And, you know, you start to identify with that character in a different way. So, yeah, it's from both perspectives, from a writing perspective and a reader's perspective, it makes it more authentic. So, yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I think that writers are mental people that probably need some serious help, because they're so, I mean, most of them, I'm not saying all of them, but most writers are introverts because it's a very solitary type profession. But
absolutely,
we love to watch everybody else. So
it's that weird.
We might be quietly. Exactly. We might be quietly sitting in the corner, but we're watching you. You know?
Stealing everything you do.
Oh, well. Yeah. Beware, people. Beware.
Beware. Just leave the room.
So you,
that's the only safe
thing. Yeah. Clear your throat. Hush, hush voices. Yeah, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So your first book came out last year, and I mean, you have a whole series in that series, right? That's the Cowboy series that came out.
That's right. Yeah. So August 25th, my debut came out. It's a novella, and it's called Cowboy Valentine, and we're turning it into a series. So the next book will be coming out next March. And that one will be called Cowboy Resurrection. And if anyone who's listening who read the first one, this is a family of brothers plus some other people who live in the town. So the story is based on this family and their friends. And the town is, the town is in Central California, in the kind of rural heartland of California. And I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's incredible. It all just started with a short story, and then that slowly became the novella, and then just out of this tiny short story, a whole cast of characters just walked out, and I've been following them around for the last few months. It's great.
Well, I'm excited, and I want to read this, because, I mean, I can tell how humorous it's got to be. Even though it's a romance, I know that this has got to be like, pee my pants funny, because here's our one liner for this story, guys. Listen to this. I'm just reading the first sentence on our synopsis, but this is what they call, it's perfect for an elevator pitch. And if you're a beginning writer, you'll know what an elevator pitch, a one line pitch is, but this is it. Ball busting businesswoman meets no holes barred cowboy. How can you beat that? That's freaking hilarious. I mean, you know, it's going to be like a, oh my God.
Yes.
Love hate relationship type of wonderful romance with lots of tension. There's got to be lots of tension. So I'm excited. That right there, just one sentence, and you had me on that one. So that's exciting. And so your first one's a novella, and you've got the second one that's coming in March. But in between, you put out a book that doesn't relate to those. It's a different.
Different series.
Okay. And so that was the one with the girl from the sushi chef. Okay, the sushi chef and I can't speak. Sushi chef and the fisherman. Okay.
Exactly.
Yay.
Yeah.
And
yay.
Here's. And it's the first line in that one, or the first line on your synopsis says sex, drugs, and spicy tuna rolls.
That's it right there.
Perfect. So you have a lot planned. I mean, looking at your website, you have a lot planned out for the next, it looks like a year or two. So you're
really lucky with,
you're a busy girl.
In a good way. I'm really excited. I can't believe that this is my job. I was a, like I said in my bio, I was a teacher for about 13 years and actually started doing this full time about a year and a half ago. And so it's just kind of the time that I've been able to put into it, it's just kind of grown and grown and grown and grown. And I've been so lucky to work with the people that I do.
So how long has your journey been? I mean, when did you start seriously writing? And then how long did it take you to, you know, sell the book and find out that this was what you were going to do?
I think for a lot of people who find themselves in this career, like, we've always written. Probably after we read our first book, we started writing because it's such a wonderful, you know, it's such a wonderful experience, and you wanna see if you can try your hand at it. And so I've always written, but publishing was a different story. So I went to school. I was an English major, and I became an English teacher, and I did that for a while. And kind of, I came to romance really late. I came to it, I was about 30, and I just picked up a book out of curiosity and absolutely fell in love with the genre, like wholeheartedly, immediately, probably by the first half of the first page, you know? And it became something that I found myself thinking about it all the time. And when I would come home from my day job, I would read and I would write stories to kind of blow off steam, and found that I really enjoyed doing that. About 2013, I looked up the local chapter of the Romance Writers of America here in Los Angeles. It's the Los Angeles Romance Authors. It's a great organization. And the first time I walked in, I was like, what am I doing here? You know, I don't know what I'm doing. Who are these people? And I immediately got matched up with a mentor, and her name is Samantha Beck, and she's a contemporary romance author. She's fantastic. And just having a conversation with a romance author one-on-one, I think kind of changed my life, because you start to think, like, this is a possibility. You can do this. And, you know, with her encouragement and with her guidance, I was able to learn, you know, what is a pitch? You know, very basic stuff. What is a pitch?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And it's different when you're talking to somebody who's actually doing it versus looking up information on the internet. So I guess my first advice for anyone who would want to write romance is to join a community. And that has made all the difference for me. Like, being able to talk to people one-on-one and get a clearer picture of what their experience really is like, it turned on the lights for me completely. So that was, I guess that was about 2014. And I had this novel. And it was rejected all over town by everyone and their grandmothers, who came in and wrote me letters of rejection. It was very nice. And while I was waiting for that, you know, my next rejection, I put together some cowboy short stories that I'd written in my free time, just, you know, kind of like a writing exercise. And I submitted them to one of my publishers, Sam Hain. And my editor contacted me, and she said she couldn't offer me a contract on the way that the stories were. They were just short stories. But she said, hey, how about that first one? Can you expand it? And, of course, like, I said, well, yeah, of course, hell yes, I will do anything you want me to do.
Right.
So, yeah. And so I did that. So, yes, it must have been about December 2014. I turned Cowboy Valentine from a short story into novella, and then I submitted it, and the next month she offered me the contract, and I was over the moon. Like, I was dancing in my kitchen. My dogs were scared. It was pretty awesome. Yeah, that was good.
Well, you didn't have to deal with years and years and years of rejection like some people do. So that's good. I mean, and it's funny that it was one of the ones that you kind of did as a, you know, to practice or as exercise or whatever, you know, the ones you wrote probably more for fun or to take up exercise your brain were the ones that grabbed on first. So that just tells you to relax. Right.
Exactly. It's never what you think it's going to, you know, like, oh, this is, people are going to love this. Like, no.
Yeah.
<They're not. laughs> You just never know. You never know what's going to happen. And so, you know, just, I feel like I learned the most working with an editor. And so, you know, as we worked on the story over a few months, I started to learn, you know, how to kind of shape my prose and make it more reader-friendly and less, you know, kind of full of myself, I guess, and more fun to read, you know. I feel like part of the process of becoming a writer for me, and it's still weird for me to say that because it hasn't been that long, is kind of to get over myself, I guess, you know, just tell the story, you know. Don't be in every shot, you know. You don't have to be all fancy all the time. Just tell the story. And
yeah,
I feel like the closer I get to that, I feel the stronger the stories become.
Well, it goes back to the, you know, everybody wants, especially having been an English major, you know, you probably understand this more than some people, but, you know, everybody thinks that you have to write literary fiction. And tell a good story, you know, and it goes back to the keep it simple, you know, the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, you know, just write the story and don't let all the extra stuff get in the way. And that is, you're right, though, that's a beginner problem. And it's hard to step out of your own way sometimes.
Right. And you're really self-conscious. You're thinking about, you know, oh, what are they going to think about this? What are they going to think about? Just tell the story. Let your characters tell the story, and it'll happen, I feel. Hopefully.
But I also,
I don't know.
I also hear from authors all the time, even authors who've written 40, 50 books, that, you know, they're still learning, and that it's, if you're, that you're always learning. It's that every book is a learning experience, that you're always shaping your, you know, the way you write, and you're always fine-tuning your voice and things like that. So that's kind of the fun thing about writing too, is you could write forever, but you still, you never feel dead to the world, because you're always learning. You're learning, not only are you learning as a writer, but you're learning as a human. Cause like I said earlier, creating characters is part of, you know, you have to study the human character. You've got the whole human experience. So you're always kind of outwardly looking at the world. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a cool profession. I mean, not just to
it
say
is.
You're a writer, but you're like investigating the world all the time and people, and it's really cool. So, yeah. And to be able to, you know, go from, you know, your day job, which is, I'm not saying teaching is not rewarding. I did it too. But it was exhausting. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a lot out of you, and then you still have a part of you, if you're a creative person at the end of the day, that doesn't feel exactly totally fulfilled. So, I mean, I hope you've been able to find that now, where, you know, you're like, now I get to do the thing that makes me feel fulfilled at the end of the day. You know, it's kind of like filling your stomach up, you know, with a meal where you're like, ah, that was good. Okay, good.
I know. It's one of those things where there hasn't been a lot like this for me, where you put your head down and you start working, and then you look up and 8 hours have passed and you can't believe it sometimes. Like, that's the kind that's the relationship I have with writing. And I love teaching. I love my students. I taught at an all-girls Catholic high school. And,
oh, wow.
That was an experience, and actually working with young women and kind of seeing the different ways that they grow and learn and think, it, I feel like that was my education. I learned a lot about, women from my students. They were teenagers, but I learned about, you know, what you want out of your life. Like, what is in your heart? What is it that you're looking for? And I write about these women who are a little bit younger than me. And so I remember my students, which is probably weird, right? Because I write romance. I write erotic romance. Not like that guy. not like that.
No.
But in terms of their emotional development, I feel very lucky to have been able to work with young people for so long that, I can kind of understand the vulnerabilities that my characters feel. Again, like the different ways that they're unfulfilled, the different ways that they face conflict. And so I have this like inadvertent store of information that I can draw from when I'm creating these characters and their, you know, like these emotional landscapes inside of these characters. So I feel very fortunate to have taught.
Yeah, that's a really good, you've got a really good, like you've got your own backstory going, you know, where you can... Well, I mean, and it was funny because you said that you said about coming into romance later in your life,
right.
How you just, you know, you never really read it, and then you picked it up and were like, wow. But, you know, romance, unless you've got some kind of worldly knowledge to what romance is really all about, you don't get the same feelings, you know, you don't get the same experience out of it. So, that's why I think a lot of women pick up a romance in their late 20s, early 30s, maybe late 30s, and go, wow, I've missed this. I mean, I'm going to sit here and tell you that I fully admit that my first romance novel was Twilight. And it was Twilight because I was a young adult librarian, and I refused to read it because it was so trendy.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, you girls, go on, y'all go read this. And they're like, no, seriously, you've got to read this. It's like, and I'm like, y'all, I am an adult. I don't need to read that, you know. And I didn't read romance. I was one of these that read, I was reading, you know, the thrillers and the legal thrillers and I was reading lots and lots of nonfiction because I was such a smart librarian at the time.
Right.
And and then I was like, one of my friends was like, seriously, read it. I was like, all right. And I was like, oh, my God. What was I thinking? And then I go to my friends, here, read this, read it. And then we have this, like, big cult club, you know, of Twilight Hards. And, that was my gateway drug to romance. And then
it's like falling down a well. You don't know what happened, but you're there. It's amazing.
And when I said to my friend, I was like, oh, my gosh, have you read Twilight? And they're like, seriously, you just read that? I mean, that came out like 3 years ago. What's your problem? And they're like, okay, you want some adult books? You want some adult romance
that's
similar to that? And then I got J.R. Ward thrown at me and Sherilyn Kenyon, and it was on like Donkey Kong after that, you know. There was no stopping me. So I became quite infatuated with romance after that. So I understand.
Too, exactly.
It does. And I can't, I mean, if you go back and listen to my shows from the beginning, it's almost the same story everywhere, except for there were the few exceptions of the authors who started reading their mom's Harlequins when they were like 10, sneaking them or something. You know, there were some of those, but most of them were, you know, picked it up later. And then, you know, like you, it just became something that they were so passionate about. They just, you know, they thought about it all the time and thought, wrote it just to get it out, you know, or
right.
Hey, I could write too, you know. So yeah, it's wonderful.
I think for me it was like, you know, I mean, I was a literature major, and so we're really snotty. We're snooty about what we read. Like you would never pick up a Harlequin. Like, what are you?
Right.
You know, you're educated. What is this, right? So when I actually did pick, I think it was a Scottish historical, and was one of my first. Yeah. And so you kind of pick it up, and I read it at a time when I felt really, I know that I was feeling really kind of ground down by life, like really kind of felt like I was at a dead end in a lot of ways, and really just kind of going through my days, going through the motions. And I feel like, this is really corny, but I feel like romance novels taught me how to feel optimistic again. It's like you practice feeling positive when you read a romance novel, even if things aren't going great in your own life. It kind of, I don't know, it reroutes your neural pathways into being more of an optimistic person. And I feel like a lot of things changed when I started reading romance, and definitely a lot of things changed when I started writing it. So for me, it's a very important genre.
Well, I think romance, for several reasons. I mean, when you start to read a romance, you know that it's going to end well, one way or the other.
Right.
Because that's a rule, you know. There's it's going to have a happily ever after or happier than they were type of thing. And you, it also, it's an escape. You know, for anybody who reads romance and says, oh my gosh, this is so not realistic, or that was so predictable, or that was so blah, blah, blah. You know what? We deal with life all day long. We want to read a book and get out of that reality for a minute. So who cares, you know? If it's not, I mean, who cares if you're on the train and you start talking to somebody and 10 minutes later you're making out? Yeah, okay, so that's not real and that doesn't really happen, but it could. Why not? And so we like to read that. You know, that's our...
Well, I mean, it's...
Everybody fantasizes,
it
you know.
I mean, the world is a big place. It might happen, you know. And
yeah,
it
sure does.
To shine a light on things that happen that are great. And I get my inspiration from, you know, stories in the news. So it happens, you know. There are people around me where it happens. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And yes. And you know, I mean, the escape factor, you know, where that's why readers have, you know, readers have lower blood pressure and all this stuff, because they take, especially romance readers, because they take the moment to get away from their normal everyday stress for a moment. And then when you read a story and you get really connected and you get into it and you go, you start to feel those, I don't know what they call it. Is it empathetic emotions or whatever, because you're reading, you know, when you cry, you're happy, you laugh, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You produce endorphins, like you're experiencing that, what the character's feeling. So yeah, you get that high, you get the endorphin rush from, you know, the first kiss or laughing your butt off at something that this character does or whatever, because it, you actually are vicariously experiencing it. So you still get the same benefit. So yeah, I mean, I can see how it, constantly reading romance would start to make you feel more positive, because you're getting dumped with endorphins all the time, and you're just got, you've got a different kind of like open outlook about life a little bit, that, you know, things could have a happy ending. Why not? You know, not to say that you're not realistic, but, you know, yeah, things to start. And I feel the same way.
It's more realistic. I actually think it's more realistic to believe in the existence of happy endings without saying that they don't. If you say that they don't exist, you're, that's not realistic. Like, how can you say that only bad things are going to happen? Good things happen.
Well,
both of them happen. Both of them happen. You know, that's realistic to me.
Well, and somebody who sits around and is, you know, totally pessimistic is only going to have bad things happen to them, because they're never going to see the good things that happen. So they might as well just go bury their head in the sand and stay there. So. And I used to
I've
be
been
that,
that
person.
I've
I
been
really
that
was.
Person.
Yeah.
Too. Ah,
yeah. I was that person. I know what it's like, and it's not a great place to be. So yeah, it goes back to that. That goes back to the whole what is it? You put whatever energies you put out, you get back type of thing. So you know, you think positive, positive thoughts, positive things happen, and romance novels just help that.
Right.
There's my PSA for romance novels for the night.
That's right. Don't do drugs, guys. Just read romance.
That's right. Don't do drugs. Read romance novels. Oh, I'm going to put
there,
that
done.
All over the internet now. I'm gonna put out the phone number again if anybody wants to call in. It is 347-633-9609. You can call in to talk to Mia Hopkins on the air. So remember that before you call in. And we have had a creeper once or twice. So just in case, we'll get to laugh at you if you call in breathing heavy or something. So don't do it. it was actually pretty funny. But after this person called in, we had about 10 minutes of talking about what we thought was wrong with them. So
yeah.
Anyway,
right.
So don't do it.
Call in. And if you're rude, we'll talk about you for like, so be careful.
So you, since you taught English, and well, you taught at a parochial school, so you may have had a different selection, but this is just something that I kind of have always thought. Pride and Prejudice was in high school. I hated it. I couldn't stand reading it. It was so boring.
Oh, my gosh. I found the other person who feels the way that I do.
I was like, why are you making – I don't care. I can't understand how these people talk. I could care less what she thinks about this guy. You know.
Oh, I
and
have
I read
to be
it.
In the closet for years pretending I liked that book.
I just looked at people like, whatever. And then I reread it in college. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, my college was after my first marriage ended and mm-hmm. you know, everything else. So I had like worldly experiences all behind me, and I finally figured out why people love it, and I loved it, and I was like, okay,
something that you have to come to right later.
Yeah. And yeah. So I think I just feel like, having been a teacher, and you know, I didn't teach them that old, but you know, thinking about these, the only books that I liked in high school were ones that were a good story that I could identify with.
Right.
Like Romeo and Juliet. Yeah, I was there. I was a teenager. You know, I understood this mm-hmm. drama-filled love crap and, you know, parents saying you can't see somebody. I understood all that. But, you know, my Antonia, what? No. I've never been in a wagon. I don't know anything about it. You know, I just wasn't there. I don't want to say mentally. I wasn't mentally mature enough. I didn't have
probably knowledge. Probably emotionally mature to be
emotionally
able to empathize
mature.
With characters, to right. be able to empathize with characters that are so different from you. I think it takes, you know, you need to be a little bit more mature to be able to do that. Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, you haven't felt those things in relationships yet, where you can really understand the complexity of a human relationships mm-hmm. and things. Mm-hmm. And so when I got older and read these things, I was like, wow, that is a really great book. Oh my gosh. And I think we kind of, I love the idea that to, you know, enrich kids with classics, but sometimes I think we do them a disservice by giving them things to read that they can't possibly get what they should get out of it, you know, because they're not there yet. You know, they just don't have enough worldly background. They haven't experienced enough in life to appreciate it the same way that mm-hmm. you know, and maybe that's why they teach things like, you know, the symbolism and all that back then, instead of talking about the story. But mm-hmm. I just, you know, I've just kind of always thought that about things like, well, Friends and Pride and Prejudice was kind of the thing that made me think that, because I love it now. I mean, that's mm-hmm. Mr. Darcy's just my idea of the perfect man, but mm-hmm. I was like, whatever, in high school. So I don't know. What are you feeling?
I think maybe I was in my mind a little bit of a high schooler for a very long time, because I still haven't fallen in love with Pride and Prejudice. There it is. I just lost half of my readers. Bye, guys. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought it could have worked out, but no. I was always a Bronte. I always liked the Bronte so much more.
Oh, yeah, I like the Bronte.
That I loved all the like gothic kind of, you know, like I want Heathcliff on, but I always thought that. I always felt really claustrophobic in Austen's books, which I guess is the point, but I think it affected me in a negative way. It was just too much. Like, I wanted to go out of that house and I wanted to scream, and I couldn't do it. I just don't know. I think that students are all going to have their own preferences, and, you know, the love that a teacher has for the subject sometimes is going to transfer over, and sometimes it isn't, you know.
Yeah.
You would just have the kids read all kinds of different kinds of books, and so, you know, and keep our fingers crossed that one of them would stick, you know. but Romeo and Juliet, I taught freshmen for a long time, and I remember Romeo and Juliet was always a big hit. Later on, what was another one? The Importance of Being Earnest, because it was so goofy. That was another one that kind of stuck.
Yeah.
I think my students always liked the plays, because there were so many. They could hear the voices a little bit more clearly.
Right.
And we could, you know, we could perform in classes a little bit more active. So that's what I remember. Mm-hmm. They liked things that were a little bit more lively.
Well, I like The Importance of Being Earnest because it's the whole play is just this giant pun.
Misunderstanding,
you know?
And it's so funny.
Yeah.
I mean,
really,
a modern story based on that idea of like having a double life. I think that would be fantastic.
I know. It would.
I'm
it
gonna
would.
Write
in the way. There you go. Write that one down. Yeah, I'd like to read that one. Send that one away. But
well,
yeah,
cowboys,
it's just,
I don't know how.
We'll with cowboy, it. Why not?
Yeah.
Cousette has to be in the English countryside. It doesn't.
Exactly.
I just always wondered if English teachers felt that way, if it was just me. You know,
no,
whether
there were,
you
of course there were books, yeah, there were books that I didn't, you know, that I didn't feel one way or another about, but you have to be real enthusiastic about them. But we were very lucky because we had a really great librarian at our high school who would get local authors to come and talk to the girls.
Oh, wow.
And she made sure that we had a lot of new books, you know, cycling through. And, you know, she was a great resource. I really enjoyed working with her. So you guys are important. Man, you guys are so important.
It is an amazing thing to find, have a kid come in, or sometimes I had parents come in who would say, oh, my kid needs to read a book for school and he hates to read. And that was always like, that set a fire under me, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, really? I was like, I guarantee you I can find a book he's going to like. And they were like, okay, you know, go right ahead. So, you know, after 5-minute little interaction reference interview and find out the things that the kid likes. You know, what movies have you read, have you watched that you like? You know, just things like that. Do you play video games? Just going through the whole list of things and then finding a book and saying, I want to hear what you think. I mean, mm-hmm. if you hate it, come back and tell me. But I would say 97% of the time, I had a kid come back and say, is there a second one in this series? That had to be the best feeling in the world. I mean, I can do reference all day long with an adult, but if an adult comes to the library looking for a book, they're already a reader. But a kid who has to read something and comes back and wants more, that's a score. I mean, that's a
yeah.
big score. So.
You just yeah. converted somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
and you change their life. You change their relationship with reading. They're never gonna feel afraid to pick up a book or, you know, hesitant
or
to pick up a book. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that was the best part about the job. You know, feeding adults and my adult readers that I fed romance. They called me their smut peddler, and I was like their local dealer, and they always came to me because they're like, okay, I read this series, so what do you suggest next, you know, and I had always
like
had a big
shaky and shifty eyes.
Exactly. I was like, I'm the pusher, so yeah, that's always a good feeling, and you know, I'm sure as an author that you probably have that same kind of feeling when somebody tells you or writes you or lets you know that they had that kind of connection with your books, because it's just, you know, that's what you want. That's why you, well, it's probably not why you write, but that's what you would like to be the outcome of your writing, is somebody to say, wow, I read that book. And I mean, you know, I really connected with that person, or she's so much like me, or, you know, I thought you were writing that about me or something along those lines.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's amazing. And it's so strange to think that somebody just took a walk inside your head when they read your book. It's really odd. I'm still getting used to that. I'm still totally getting used to that. But I have to say, like, even people who don't write me great reviews, I mean, I've had a couple kind of lukewarm ones. I feel like even that I'm kind of grateful for, because they feel enough ownership of my characters to have an opinion. And I feel like even that, I accomplished something. So, you know, win-win. Either way, I'm fine.
Well, and they took the time to actually read before they formed an opinion, which is better than some
very,
people.
Very
better
kind.
Than, yeah, better than the people who buy the e-books and turn them back in a week. I am one of these advocates for calling bullshit on that. So. If you're listening and you do that, shame on you. I think that's shameful. Most of the times you buy a book for 99 cents or $2.99 at the most. You don't need to turn it back in after a week. No. I think Amazon shouldn't be doing that, but that's just me. So that's my other PSA for the night. Okay. We have a caller, so let me get them on the line.
What?
Here.
Yay.
Yeah. Hi, welcome to the air. You're on The Librarian, and you're on with Mia Hopkins.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
You're live on The Librarian.
Hi, my name is Cordelia, and I'm from Sierra Madre. And I'm calling because I have a question. I noticed that Mia's written a lot about cowboys, and I wanted to know, of all the cowboys she's written about, which is her favorite and where she got inspiration to write about them? Hello, can you hear
Mia?
Me?
There you go.
Oh, my gosh, she asked me about cowboys. I get to talk about cowboys. I am so happy.
Well, I think, you know, you can't ever say which one is your favorite because the one that you just worked on is probably going to be your favorite. The hero that you just worked on is going to be the one that's looming large inside your head. So right now, I suppose I'm going to talk about Dean. And Dean is the hero of the story that's coming out in March, and that is book two in my Cowboy Cocktail series with Sam Hain. And he is the eldest brother in a family of four, and they're ranchers in the Central Valley. But Dean is kind of like, he's my Lord Byron character. He's my Byronic cowboy. He's very curious. I know, a Byronic cowboy.
You
I'm
totally
so...
coined that one, Byronic. Okay, go ahead.
Byronic. And, yeah, he's been burned really hard by love, and he's been on the road for the last 10 years. He'd promised himself he would never come back to the ranch, and his family needs him now, so he's back because of duty, not because he wants to be. And he's probably my favorite right now because he's so closed off to everyone else, and yet he's a very observant person. Like, what he's been doing on the road is, like, I'm a big fan of bull riding, and I don't know if either of you have gone to a PBR event or a rodeo event where there's bull riding, but one of my favorite things about it is they're basically referees, and they're bullfighters. And so what they do is when the cowboy's on the bull and he gets bucked off, there's usually a team of bullfighters who are there to separate the bull from the cowboy so he doesn't get trampled or thrown or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what Dean does. He's a protector. And
this
profession where you don't get a lot of glory, like the bull riders are the ones who get, you know, all the accolades, but the bull fighters are the ones who have to stare down an 1,800-pound bull and make sure it doesn't hurt a cowboy. So he is my absolute favorite right now because just for everything that I've said, also he's really hot. So that's my favorite right now. Yeah, Dean McKinnon. And his book is Cowboy Resurrection, and that's the one that's coming out in March.
Awesome. Thank
yeah.
you so much.
Thank you, Cordelia.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Cordelia?
Bye-bye.
Cordelia?
Oh,
she's gone. That's okay. That's okay. Well, thanks for calling in, Cordelia.
That was so kind.
Okay. That was a really good question.
It was, and I got to talk about cowboys.
Cowboy. So did your cowboy obsession start late in life, or has this always been an obsession with you?
You know, I don't know where it started. I think there was a TV show when I was, I don't know, maybe about 11 or 12 called The Young Riders. I don't know if you remember this. Not a lot of people do. But it was about Pony Express riders. And there were a couple of famous people. It was one of the Baldwin brothers, the blonde one, Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah, I think I do remember it. Yeah, I think I do remember
and,
it briefly.
Like a really young Josh Brolin. And I loved the show. And I was the only one in my class who watched the show. And I think that's where it started. That's where the cowboy obsession started. And it was always kind of just underneath the surface until I started writing romance. And it just came back full force.
So do you go watch bull riding events, professional bull riding events?
Yeah, I just kind of got into it in the last couple of years. And they were actually just here this past weekend in Anaheim at the Honda Center. So we watched a really cool event, yeah.
Your husband go with you?
Yeah, sometimes he comes. We'll go to regular rodeos where there's a lot of different events. He tends to like those a little bit more. Bull riding is basically just one long heart attack, you know,
right.
The whole time. Like pure adrenaline. And he's not a big fan of that, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, the drooling over cowboys doesn't help either, so.
Oh, what are you talking about? I don't care about at all. This poor man. I love my husband. I don't know if he's listening. I love you.
Well, he's every hero, so of course you love him.
Exactly. He is every hero. Well, I feel a lot of traits from, like, I feel like he's a very positive guy, and so I've had some characters who kind of just roll with the punches and seem, like, very positive, and that's based on his attitude. So,
yeah,
there are a lot of elements of him in the characters. And he was a newspaper reporter for a very long time, so he's a really great beta reader. He's fantastic. He's really fast.
Oh, that's awesome.
Very, really perceptive, and so I feel really lucky to have him in my corner. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Having a built-in beta reader is great. Yeah. So you have the second in the cowboy series coming out next month, and then your other series, the Kings of California series. How many more are you planning? I see that you have a second one planned in that one too.
Right. Yeah, we don't have a date for that one yet. Sometime this year, I think, will be when it's released. But the Kings of California are three brothers, so it'll be a trilogy. And the connection with the cowboy series is that they grew up in that town, but they left. So they're connected by the town. So there's one series where the brothers stayed in town, and one series where these brothers left. And the story that came out in November, the middle brother, and his name is Sam, he's the fisherman, and he kind of gets into a little trouble with a loan shark who turns out to be a lot more dangerous than he thought. And when I was thinking about the three brothers, I was thinking about superheroes in terms of personality. So Sam would be Spider-Man. So he's a little bit, he's goofy. He's a... kind of a rogue, doesn't have the best luck, I guess, he's really quick on his feet, and he solves all his problems one way or another. The book that will be coming out next is the youngest brother, and his name is Jack, and Jack is my Superman, so he's very, very positive, very Dudley-do-right, and so it was fun to find a main character who would challenge him in that way. And then for the third character, the eldest brother, Adam, is my Batman. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
I'm really excited. Yeah. In terms of personality, they're all... Yeah.
That'll be fun. Well,
I'm so excited.
Do you send me the information when the March book comes out so I can put it on the librarian page and let people know it's out. And
sure.
We have just a few minutes left, so let's make sure that everybody knows where they can find you online and where they can find your books.
Sure. So the main site is my website, and it's miahopkinsauthor.com, all one word. And my handle on Twitter and Instagram is miahopkins, XOXO, all one word. And you can find me on Facebook at Mia Hopkins Books. That's where I am. I also have enormous Pinterest boards full of cowboys and things like that. Anyway, my handle on there is Mia Hopkins XOXO also. So, I'm all over.
She's all over. And your books, are they available at all the retailers?
You can find all the buy links on my website and information about both series. I also have short stories coming out in a couple anthologies, and all of that information is on my website as well.
And you blog too, right?
And I blog, every Tuesday.
Well, we all intend to blog a lot, but I blog for everybody else. That's what I do.
That is what you do. That's a big job.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. My mom's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Nothing for me." It's okay.
No, we appreciate it, man. This is awesome. My very first interview, you made it so, so wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And I'm glad you could be on the show. And right here at this link, the live link turns into the podcast in probably about 10 minutes after the show. So feel free to share the link and people can listen in. And it'll be yours.
I will listen as well with a glass of wine because I don't know if I can handle this.
I listened to myself after the first two shows just to make sure the audio quality was good. I couldn't stand the sound of my voice, and I refused to listen to it again. So
I don't know if I'll be listening to this again.
We're always so critical of ourselves. So as long as I don't listen to myself, I'm okay. So it's all good.
Cool.
Well, much continued success, and very happy that you have found your dream job. And
Thank you.
Look forward to more from you.
Great. Thank you so much.
And you have a great evening, and we look forward to getting your information about the March book, because now that everybody has heard your one-line pitch, they'll be looking forward to it, too.
Woo-hoo.
All right. You have a good one.
Okay. You too. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for listening to The Librarian tonight. And you can find me on Facebook at The Librarian, on Authors on the Air. I'm on Twitter as HOT_librarian_. Yes, that's Hot Librarian. And Google Plus as Tabitha Pope. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, from SoundCloud and iTunes. Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be found online at www.authorsontheair.com, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and just about anywhere else you can think of in the social media universe. I want to thank Linda Joyce for sponsoring this show tonight. Thank you so much, Linda. And actually, Linda is on next week on the show. And thanks to Authors on the Air for letting me share my passion for romance with you. As always, thanks to my mom for watching my kiddos so that I can do this show on Thursday night. And big smooches to my gorgeous husband. I will see you tomorrow night. This is your host, Tabitha Pope, saying see you at 9 p.m. Central next Thursday night right here on The Librarian. Sweet dreams.